I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, listeners! Should I come up with a nickname for all of y'all? Like, Musties? I don't know, that sounds horrible. So I wanted to thank everyone that's been leaving reviews in iTunes. Not written reviews, but star rating reviews, which I also appreciate. Thanks for all the new 5-star ratings. That's an accurate assessment, I do believe. Or at least I'm trying. I try. But if you want to leave full-length reviews in iTunes, I will read them on the show as long as they're good. Well, I don't know. Maybe I would read a bad one on the air, but if you leave a bad review, I don't know why you keep listening to the show. But yeah, so make sure you listen to the very end of the episode so you find out what we're watching next week, or you can follow all the social media everythings where I will tell you what we are watching next week. So, without further ado, let's get into The Golden Girls. What'll I do? It's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century from I Love Lucy News Radio. I'm your TV guy, Brett White. I'm also a reporter, producer for Decider.com. This week, I am joined by Catherine Mon and Winston Noel. Hello, Winston and Catherine.
Hey, Brett. How's We're excited to be here.
Thanks so much for coming on the show. Winston's a repeat guest.
Yes, very happy to be back.
The listeners might remember you from the Frasier episode, which I just sadly had to plug in last week's episode. after sad deaths.
Yeah.
That I'm still sad about.
We were just talking on a bummer note. Yeah, but just talking about how, it was very sad. But, man, at the same time, God, how great would it be to have such a body of work?
Yeah.
And that he started acting when he was 37.
And, I mean, like,
it was an interesting life.
It's very on brand for this particular episode of, like, man, I wish that we could have all told him what we all thought of him while he was still there. Sophia's plot in this episode makes a lot of sense.
I know, that's right.
So yeah, this week on the show, we are traveling to February 22nd, 1992. Get a load of this. Wayne's World ruled the box office.
Yes!
And I'm Too Sexy by Right Said Fred topped the charts.
Yeah, fantastic.
That's the context we're in. And then NBC aired the Golden Girls episode, Journey to the Center of Attention. Winston and Catherine, you must have seen Journey to the Center of Attention before today.
No, we did not. We had not.
It was my first ever episode of Golden Girls.
Yes!
Catherine should...
Yeah, what is everyone's history with the Golden Girls and then maybe larger television?
Yes.
90s TV.
Well, for me, the Golden Girls is something that I've kind of, it is a blank, it's like a blind spot for me pop culturally because I think, like a lot of people probably, I was like, I don't relate to this. This isn't for me. And
elderly women, you were a tiny boy.
Right. But then,
1992.
Now that I've seen, like, one of my favorite shows ever is Arrested Development.
Yeah.
And those guys, I looked and saw in the credits that Jim Valley was like one of the co-producers on this episode.
And Mitch Hurwitz is a writer in the later seasons.
And then even the writer, I don't know if I'm spoiling this, but one of the writers was Mark Cherry.
Yeah.
From the creator of Desperate Housewives.
I just noticed there was a producer named Gail Parent, which sounds to me like a very 80s movie.
Yeah.
Gail Parent.
Yeah. But I just was like, it's one of those things that, it seems like a training ground for like a ton of TV talent. And you go back, it's the same thing that I actually felt with Cheers, where I was like, I don't get this. But I went back, I was like, this is fantastic. And I think
also,
Golden Girls the same way.
It follows a very classic, like you have the classic sitcom characters, you're following a very strict format, but it is I'd read a lot of think pieces before watching this episode because it has deeply influenced female-driven television in the future. Yeah. And it really was. And I think also for me, part of what I was thinking was really interesting watching it is when have we gotten to see four old ladies on TV since then?
Yeah.
Yeah, it, it doesn't... It was revolutionary at the time. Also, because I think there were...
I think it continues to be. I don't think there's been anything like that where we go out of our way to highlight specifically older women.
I mean, so I was a big TV fan, but I did not watch The Golden Girls.
So I read a lot of the New York Times and The New Yorker. I also did that as a child because we almost did not have TV growing up.
She was the weird, like, you know, the weird kid who's like, we only watch PBS.
Or, it's a reality I can't comprehend as someone from my reality. So,
exactly.
Because I was raised by it.
Yeah.
I do think this... deserves, you can edit this as
no,
much
let's go
later.
For it.
But my parents had no cable and one TV. It was a TV that by the early 90s was distinctly of the early 80s.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And we were allowed to watch 30 minutes of TV a day, and we had to pick one show. So I picked, at the time when I was kind of cognizant of it, Animaniacs.
Of course. Yeah. That's also getting you a lot of other pop culture, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, but like I think those jokes...
you also don't understand because you're going to watch it after that.
I also... the other important thing about this is that I lived near Detroit, Michigan, which is right near Canada. So we got ABC, NBC, CBS, and then CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.
Man.
Which meant that all of the kids' TV I watched growing up was Canadian children's television. So there's a show called The Pokeroo that nobody in America has heard of. It was like formative to my childhood.
Interesting.
Yeah, she was the real weird kid.
So I make these references to getting pokerooed and people don't know what I'm talking about.
No, I've never heard of it.
Well, but a lot of early Nickelodeon shows were Canadian. Like Pinwheel was Canadian.
I remember Pinwheel very
was
much.
Was Today's Special Canadian?
Today's Special, I love.
Today's Special
You can do that on television.
Great. Yeah.
I watched Today's Special.
I remember. I got banned. Do we have this conversation? Oh. I got banned from watching this. You can't do this on can't do that on television because I sang a parody version of Joy to the World that they had called Slime to the World, and my father freaked out and forbade me from ever watching it again.
Yeah.
He's like, "Where did you get? Where did you hear that?" And I was like,
"You can't
do that
on."
I was like,
"The Nightly News."
Rather.
Peter
Jennings.
I learned it from you, Dad. So yeah, I mean, we went over, but Catherine is like
the
weird.
Well, the other thing is I went to Catholic school, so we were convinced to give up TV for Lent.
Oh, man.
So 40 days a year, I also didn't watch that 30 minutes of TV. And also when I hit either, I think it was early elementary, my dad installed an actual physical lock on the TV. He's a physicist.
Oh, you guys were watching it anyway.
So he installed an actual physical lock on the television. With a real key that you had to turn, and if the lock was turned in one direction, the because it was this old school TV that you turned the clicker, it wouldn't turn on anymore. And after he installed that, the TV had a permanent ghost shadow. So I remember trying to watch hockey when I was maybe 10 or 11, and there was a whole second hockey game happening because of the ghost. So it was like a terrible experience to even watch TV. And my parents got a new TV that they kept in their bedroom. That was just for them. And we had the shitty 80s ghost TV.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And they would lock it during the summer. And I didn't even remember this until I was older. But Mom was like, oh yeah, we did that so that all summer long we could just keep the TV locked. So you didn't really watch TV during the summer. Like we didn't even watch 30 minutes a day.
Yeah. It's crazy, which is like, I was parked in front of the TV. I'm more like you, where I was a TV kid and just watched everything.
I watched it every single day. I would get home at 3, watch it till 10 when I go to bed. Like I watched probably 5 to 7 hours on a weekday when I was at school for most of the day. Like, that's crazy.
I had
sometimes
to watch only about
watch an hour.
3 or 4.
Sometimes we would watch an hour because sometimes my mom, I think, needed to get stuff done, so we were allowed to watch part of the Batman cartoon show.
That's like, and I don't even know why. I don't know what my parent, like, because I feel like I turned out okay.
Yeah.
And I also don't think that they... Because I think there's a reason that, you know, the parents say, like, well, we don't want them to become, like, lazy or upset.
Right.
Like, there are actual things that the parents do rightfully
to
protect your child from.
Sure.
That my parents, I'm trying to figure out why they let me watch so much and never got mad about it. And I don't know if it was because, I don't know, this is now, my therapist is also like, you're a writer. And sometimes you ascribe deeper meaning to things that there is no deeper meaning to. But I'm like, I feel like while I was watching TV, I feel like my parents should have been able to see how clearly it was powering my imagination.
Yeah.
Because I was crazy internal. Like, I was writing and drawing all the time. Usually my own original stories based on the shows I like.
Yeah.
And I can imagine. And also, I didn't have any friends. And I was also allergic and couldn't really go outside and play.
Yeah.
So I feel like they were like, well, if we take away the TV, we literally
destroy
it. He has nothing else.
So I would read and read and read.
Yeah.
I mean, I just read all the time. And all joking aside, my parents had Newsweek and things like the Encyclopedia and the New York Times, which I started to read probably at a slightly weirdly young age, like 10 years old. If you'd finished your book and hadn't gone to the library yet, you'd be like, I'll just start reading these Newsweeks. And
I mean,
which also really dates. This is of a time.
Yeah.
You have a Newsweek subscription to support your school. But I would also play outside all summer long, just leave at 9 a.m. and come back at 5 and be biking. I was a huge tomboy and would, like, dissect slugs all day and do God knows what.
I just loved summers because I could watch, like, Nickelodeon during the day.
Exactly.
But when they would play, like, Little Bits.
Yeah.
My parents' kids did not turn out okay.
Huh.
Like, all three of their kids have dealt with depression and anxiety. My parents have deep control issues, and I won't go too much deeper into my dysfunctional family than that, but it's just, it's interesting because you would, if television was so bad, and we never got to see any of it.
I think it depends on the kid. Like, so I think that, like, you're an imaginative, creative, smart kid, and it's like everything, right? Like, you know...
Different for everyone.
It's different for everyone. Yeah. So, like, it sparked your imagination. It did the same thing to me.
Yeah.
The only negative thing that I can see is that occasionally, I remember there was a distinct period of my life when I would, like, turn on, I was living alone, Catherine and I, spoiler alert, we are married, but Catherine and I were dating at the time, and I lived alone, and I would turn on, like, a Law & Order SVU marathon and mean to do something, and then be like, oh, I lost 2 hours. Like, what
happened?
This
was the thing we had to figure out, too, because, A, I've become less judgmental thanks to a lot of therapy, but I really, first of all, overtly judged you for it. I also think that Law & Order is a shitty show.
That's, agree to disagree.
Okay, so we could really get into this. I feel that it is not a good way to use your time on Earth.
Yeah.
And also, I really like quiet when I'm at home and no background noise.
Oh, yeah.
And so we, for a while, were living in
Have to have a TV on it. All time.
And we lived in a studio apartment that was a small studio apartment together. So
I'll
there
still,
was some...
Before she comes home, I'll throw up an episode of Cheers. And now I'll probably do the Golden Girls because like I just like having the rhythm of it and the noise and like I'm doing my dishes while I'm not doing anything.
Yeah, yeah. And
it's like a good 20.
I used to not. Yeah. I had
it's
to kind of get
25 minute, you know. Yeah. And I grew up watching the Golden Girls, which I think I talked about. We did a Golden Girls episode, I think episode 4 or 5 with Crystal Beth, we talked about Golden Girls. So I talked about my history there. So I will say, go listen to that episode too if you haven't.
Yeah, do it.
The abridged version is like, I knew this was one of my mom's favorite shows. And I remember like we watched it, it came on Saturday nights. And so I would like go into my mom's bedroom while she was like watching it. She loved Golden Girls. So I would watch it with her. And I remember like I found it hilarious. And it's always been one of my favorite shows.
Yeah.
And it has been in syndication, like on Lifetime back in the day.
Oh, right.
All the time. Like, it has never left syndication. It is still, like, draws millions of viewers in syndication today. Like, it's one of these essential syndication shows. So I've seen every episode a million times.
Right.
Like, with my mom. I remember watching the final episode. I remember watching it. I think we were in East Tennessee at my grandparents' cabin. Because I remember the whole, like, Dorothy gets married to Leslie Nielsen in the series finale.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, let's get into the episode.
Sorry.
This week on Must Have Seen TV, we're talking about the Golden Girls episode Journey to the Center of Attention. It is the 18th episode of Season 7 and was written by Jamie Wooten and Mark Cherry and directed by Lex Peseris. Here's how Hulu describes the episode. Blanche brings a lonely Dorothy down to the rusty anchor. How accurately does that describe the episode? That's 5% of it?
Yeah. I mean, like, but I'm sort of glad. I kind of enjoy that that's... I mean, I guess that wasn't... You were going to watch the Golden Girls or not.
Yeah.
You weren't going to be like, well, this sounds great.
The synopsis really selling me on it.
Yeah.
Man, can I tell you my main thought when we saw the rusty anchor? was that I understand more why The Sopranos was seminal television now, because the Rusty Anchor did not look real to me.
No, let's again, we'll talk about this right now, because I had a note for this later. It's
sorry.
Like, I love the, like, bars in sitcoms are actually my ideal bar, because they are,
like, well-lit.
Well-lit, yeah. Quiet, everyone is mostly behaved, and even when
full
they're
full of old men. Yeah.
But, like, Cheers and yeah. The Rusty Anchor are like, yeah, I would love to go to a bar that I can actually see and hear people in.
Right. It's dark wood, but, like, lit very well.
Yeah. And it's not, like, never
and
too
nobody's
crowded.
Drunk.
Nobody's yeah. drunk, never too crowded. I kind of feel like maybe I should start, like, call it, like, the sitcom bar.
That would be great.
Because, like, the rules are the jukebox is for show.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
We have a piano, but it's for comedy only. And only 30-second songs at a time.
Yeah, yeah because of the, yeah, like, we don't have the rights. I love it.
That's fantastic.
So funny.
I would definitely go.
Let's talk about the opening credits, because as people that are, like, super familiar with the Golden Girls, how familiar are you with the theme song?
Very. I mean, I just feel like that's one of the most famous theme songs. And I feel like, obviously, it feels like the Golden Girls sort of had a kind of camp resurgence. Or I felt like the more, as an adult, the more I've heard about Golden Girls is from, like, my friends who are gay.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
kind of talking
yeah.
about it a little bit more. But that, I know the song more recently.
Yeah.
Okay, so point, counterpoint. I sing... only the one line, thank you for being a friend, all the time, which Winston can attest to.
That's true.
I don't know what I thought it was, but I did not know it was that
until did you really?
I started to play it. I was like, well, who knew?
Oh, that's so, that is a revelation, because I was like, oh, well, clearly Clapton knows it's the Golden Girls.
No, something. I just,
we've been married for, what, 3.5 years?
Yeah.
And dating for 8, and I still don't. Didn't know that
yeah,
when
I,
she was saying that, she yeah. had no idea what the origin of the song was.
Yeah, but the only line I know, too, is thank you for being a friend. And I just yeah. sing that over and over again. Is that the whole song?
No.
Okay. That travel down that road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant. And if you do a party.
I watched this 30 minutes ago with both of you, and the fact that I truly thought the only line might be thank you for being a friend is a great example.
That they just repeated it for 30 seconds?
Why I have trouble learning song lyrics.
Yeah. The opening credits are also, because we were watching a season 7 episode, which is the last season, and the opening credits of that classic, what I think is what should be the opening credit style of every show is... it is the greatest hits of the series. With,
yeah.
like, the actor's face and then their name. And it's
yeah.
just, like, direct and to the point.
So
none
funny.
Of these, like, artsy, like, blood floating in an ocean type of, like, yeah. and just, like, random names you have no context
the
for.
The other thing
but
that I think
love
is...
it would have been artsy blood floating in an ocean and then we cut to the exact same set in front yeah. of the live studio audience.
The House of Cards intro for Golden Girls.
Yeah, right. I do think the thing that I always forget with these is, like, the helicopter shot of the city where it's
yeah.
set. Like, all, Miami. Like, Family Matters and...
Full House of San Francisco.
Yeah, but I was like, oh, right, I forget. These places, part of the... apparently in the kind of toolkit of, like, you have to show where it's set.
Yeah.
Like...
Bob Newhart's show opening is him literally walking through Chicago.
Yeah.
And it's usually the only time they actually film on location is,
right.
like, Bob Newhart flew out to
yeah.
Chicago.
Yeah.
Like, Mary Tyler Moore went to Minneapolis for
yeah.
that one, like, day of walking around the city.
Yeah.
And then the rest of it's in L.A.
Right.
And this was all in L.A., too, although the exterior of their house is... I think the exterior was originally an actual house.
Yeah.
And then they recreated it in the Buena Vista lot in Florida on MGM
oh,
Studios.
Wow.
Because I remember when I went to Disney World when I was in fifth grade in 95.
Yeah.
We took, like, the backlot tour, and I was
right,
like, over
right.
there is the Golden Girls' house. I was like,
oh,
there's
that's
the
so
exterior.
Crazy.
And
yeah.
I also like the fact that Brett's must-see would be... the Golden Girls house.
Yeah,
he's
like, oh,
I'm here
is.
At Universal Studios.
Gotta
see
this.
Thing I need to
yeah.
get on this TV, too.
Yeah, that's great.
But yeah, so the okay. episode opens up with Dorothy is on the couch, and she's depressed and watching a corn shucking video.
Yeah, that was funny.
That was also really interesting. I was just reading a thing about the death of the infomercial.
Oh.
And I was like, right, you would never see that now because these things don't exist on TV because we all stream and
yeah.
all of our viewing habits are dying. And so what's going to happen to all of these products?
They still, like, because I watch a lot of Game Show Network. And so
yeah.
I think they, all of them are now, like, their last
oh,
grit is they have the 30-second commercial, but it's for all these infomercial products.
Right.
And it's, and I've, I I watch them all the time, but like that's the only way you find them.
Yeah. Well, we were in South Carolina recently and went to a As Seen on TV store.
Oh, I love being an As Seen. Target has crazy. An As Seen on TV section.
Oh wow. Oh.
It's in the it's usually in like the aisle with like light bulbs and stuff. Okay. It's in that aisle.
Okay, that's good.
So here's my question, because I don't watch the show as I don't know the show as well.
Yeah.
This felt out of character for Dorothy to be depressed and sort of dowdy. I feel like, and maybe it's because I think of Bea Arthur as more of a confident performer, that this is like, is this consistent with this character?
It is, like, kind of, but yeah, mostly, I feel like this is her problem of the episode.
Got it.
That she's unlucky with men kind of on the rank throughout the series.
She seemed more of a loser, though, which is not...
Usually it's people are making fun of her looks or whatever, and she's like, she will then knock them down a peg.
Again, it didn't match the energy and at least kind of the, again, how I perceive it from, you know, I feel like a lot of gay men sort of see Bea Arthur as this sort of
all four of them, but yeah.
Dorothy, she's sort of like the, well, it's funny because there's like the, whatchamacallit, Mitch Hurwitz was talking about Jack, Queen, King, Joker.
Yeah.
And how he basically like structured the Bluth children are like Michael's the king, Lindsay's the queen, Job is the knave or Jack, and Buster's the Joker. And he's like, I learned how to write that being on the Golden Girls.
Yeah.
Because like, there's like,
he's the king, Blanche is the queen, Rose is the Jack, and then Sophia's the Joker.
Right. Yeah. Or you could even switch it where if you think of the knave as like somebody who transgresses or is like hypersexual, like that
Blanche
is, and then like Rose is like very feminine.
Yeah.
And like maybe that, you know, so it's like very interesting that it's like masculine energy, feminine energy, transgressive, over-sexualized energy, and then somebody who's strictly goofy and there for the jokes.
Yeah.
And it's like a very interesting, like Seinfeld has the same thing, mm-hmm. Jerry, Elaine, George.
Well, there's also that book, The Eight Characters of Comedy, which talks about it with a slightly different framework, but it's true of everything.
But that's why it felt like it bumped a little bit, that it was like, oh, this doesn't feel like Dorothy.
She's had a bad week, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. You know, just had a bad. She's on the couch shucking corn, watching people shuck corn.
Yeah.
And she's under that little blanket. It's the blanket that made it so pathetic.
Yeah. So then we get our first interaction of the episode, which is between Blanche and Dorothy, and Blanche is like getting ready to go to the Rusty Anchor. Yeah. Uh-huh. What did y'all think about their dynamic off the top?
So I had seen, and through my think piece reading, it was like, knew enough to have the context for it, but it was so tightly written.
Yeah.
It was very funny. Also, it was full of good jokes, and it was mean.
Yeah.
It was so mean. She's down, and she just keeps kicking her.
Yeah, because Blanche comes out, I was like,
well, I have a little exercise I do whenever my self-esteem's kind of low. I say my name, and then I list three positive things about myself. I'm Blanche Devereaux. I'm beautiful. Men find me desirable, and people want to be my friend.
And then Dorothy repeats it, and then Blanche's like, oh, you are supposed to come up with something for your own.
Yeah, and you know, like, one of the things I liked is that you could both enjoy watching it and know exactly what the next thing was. Like, you were always one line ahead in your mind.
But it would sometimes come, like, you're like, okay, well, you know Blanche is going to say, don't repeat it, and you're like, she's going to give her, then her like, things are,
you know, like, you could say, I'm Dorothy Zbornak. I'm a good speller, and I'm very prompt, and well, actually, there's no law that says it has to be three.
It's like you can see the joke of she's going to give her three attributes coming, but then when she gives the three attributes, it's like those two, and then well, who says there has to be three?
Yeah, that was the nice like that was the nice twist that I didn't see.
Also, I love those because those were so perfect for a woman who would have grown up in the 1940s.
Yeah,
to be like, well, in school, girls are good at spelling.
Yeah,
like, that's all of your potential is you need to spell well and be on time to be a secretary.
Right.
Yeah.
The thing that I general note about Golden Girls is, which I think is where the Arrested Development-ness comes from, is that people always say like Arrested Development has the most jokes of any show, like. That and 30 Rock. And I always say, like, when you go back and watch Golden Girls now, the joke density is astounding, especially for a live, like, not, it's edited, but, like, live in front of an audience, like, waiting for laughter.
Yeah.
And it's because they do jokes on jokes on jokes. Like, that whole, like, give me
it's
three attributes
game,
thing.
Game. Yeah. There's no...
There's the joke about the three attributes. Dorothy repeating it is a joke. Blanche listing those two are each jokes. And then her not being able to remember a third one is a joke. And then Dorothy's look off of that is a joke. And then her saying, I could strangle my best friend's...
Snap
yeah.
her neck.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, yeah. like, five or six jokes yeah. off of one premise.
I
yeah.
did. I started to completely forget that the studio audience was there mm-hmm. because it was moving so fast. And I think they must sort of, I wonder if they're like, because they, it wasn't the kind of thing where, you know, when you watch Friends, that whole joke about Friends without the laugh track,
yeah.
but like, but it didn't feel like they were like, stretch it for time with the laugh,
yeah.
like let the laugh, like, which is when we see like TGIF stuff where you're like, this is bad.
Yeah.
And they're just like,
that laugh
stretching.
Does not match the joke that was told.
yeah, yeah. yeah.
It's just like, this.
Yeah, this is like, we need to kill 3 seconds every joke. So you, yeah. like, just do that. Anyway.
Well, usually because when the audience is laughing, the camera is pausing. All four of them are so good at reaction shots.
Yeah.
Like, a lot, like, later on, Rose's whole game of everyone just, like, yelling at her for forgetting the wake thing. And then
yeah.
her, just, Betty White's just reaction. Her face
yeah.
on that is just funny.
Yeah. So
very
great.
Interesting. So then Blanche's whole idea of like, well, let me cheer you up by taking you down to the Rusty Anchor, which we already talked about, is the perfect bar.
Right.
Like,
so
honestly.
Great.
Also the gayest straight bar.
So funny.
I
love
like yeah. the worst possible hookup bar
yeah.
because it's bright, quiet, nobody's stressed.
But
all men.
All
yeah.
men.
Also.
Yeah,
it's
very weird.
Like,
that was
I feel
weird.
Like Blanche has stumbled onto one of Miami's old elder man gay
right.
bars.
Right. Which is also so funny because it's true. It's like all we want to do is like have innuendo with these elderly women and then watch them sing.
Yeah.
like, there's no
sing
doubt.
Old musical songs.
yeah. But the other thing I thought was really funny was that the
there's
age
also
range.
One token young guy. There.
Yeah, that was what I laughed really hard. I was like laughing to myself because it was like, oh, yep, makes sense. And clearly it's like, we gotta put, like, just get one of the writers in here. you know, like.
No, but it was like Paul Rudd? like a dirty, dingy Paul Rudd?
But then
yeah.
there was another kind of heavy set, like,
oh,
guy
yeah.
who was,
who
had lines, who, yeah.
When they walk in, okay, first of all, I need to ask this, because Blanche tells us, like, it's nickel beer night. So, what does that mean? As someone that, like, I like, does that mean that
the beers
on sale for a
nickel?
Oh,
yeah.
My guess is that it's for
so.
Ladies only. That's what I assume.
Yeah, that would make more sense.
I assume
I feel like
it was
that
the
bar
would
be out of business.
Only.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they used to, my mom worked as a cocktail waitress for a little while in the 70s.
Ooh.
During an interesting period in her life, down in Florida, and they did 25-cent drinks for
yeah, okay.
the girls on Tuesdays.
That makes
yeah.
sense, then.
And she always thought it was, like, the worst night to work and so bleak because it was a lot of guys who were very ready to go and still not that many women. and so they would just go and...
I mean, that's the Rusty Anchor.
yeah, that's also the Rusty Anchor.
and I think that that's when it got to be unpleasant.
Is the Rusty Anchor, like, part of the retirement community? It
well,
feels
no, they,
like it's...
Because they're not in the retirement community.
Oh, okay. They're just in Florida?
Yeah, that's Blanche's home.
Oh.
And then she just started... She rented out the other rooms. Because Sophia was in a retirement home.
Oh, and they pulled...
It burns
okay.
down in the pilot, and she comes. And then the running
oh.
joke of the series is, you sent me to Shady Pines! And it was basically like a concentration camp.
Right.
The joke. It's like,
right.
It was horrible! Like,
yeah.
they were horrible to us.
Right.
And then whenever Dorothy gets mad at her, her thing is always, Shady Pines, Ma! Like,
yeah,
trying
yeah.
to send her back.
Right.
anyway. So
that's great.
There's a really good joke. There's a Cheers reference. When they go to the
yes.
Rusty Anchor,
yes.
Blanche is like,
you're going to introduce me to some of your friends?
Yes, if I see anybody I know.
Blanche!
It's a dog-eat-dog world, and I'm wearing no underwear.
the Norm joke is milkbone underwear.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, wow, that's just direct Cheers.
When did Cheers end?
Cheers was still going on at this point.
Okay.
But it was
I was wondering
11.
If this was like a homage. Because then, but then, they called it back when Dorothy came in, and she said, they said, what's your pleasure? And she said, some old actor in a waterbed.
Yeah.
Clawed someone on it.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, right. But that was when, I think the second time when I was like, oh, yeah, they're really, these are like direct
yeah.
Norm joke.
yeah.
But yeah, that was great.
but yeah, hearing that, I wanted to talk about Dorothy's first look in the, or her dressed up look.
Her Sergeant Peppers.
Her light was this black.
I was like, we have to talk about this.
The worst part of it was like, that is what I would have worn.
Yeah.
During the 90s.
Definitely. I mean, 100%. I was like, this is the thing. I'm still saying 100% all the time after watching American Vandal, by the way.
Oh, is that? Oh, yeah.
Because that kid goes 100%.
I love that.
100%. Now I start to say it. Yeah, you can cut that out. Anyways,
how broad are her shoulders as a rule?
Shoulder pads, for instance, it's 92. But then 92.
I think that she also, like, it's a hat on a hat there, right? Like, pads on broad.
Also, the earrings I loved. At first, I was like, are they Chanel? And then we got in closer, and I was like, they are not. They're just big.
It was crazy. She's in a dark.
I wrote down like Michael Jackson look. Like it looks like his in the early 90s when he was going through that militaristic.
Yeah.
It was like a Rhythm Nation Janet Jackson Michael.
It was very in its. I actually thought it was Nautical Sailor.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I actually have a photo from 1992 where it's my mom, me, and my younger brother all in matching Nautical Sailor outfits.
Oh, yeah.
But it was in style.
There was that
It was back in style like one or two seasons ago. You saw all of these military-inspired, specifically Navy Admiral-inspired jackets.
Yeah.
Well, I also like a good, like, navy and white striped shirt.
Yeah.
It was a nice look.
Yeah,
well, that's probably what she had on underneath.
Yeah.
It was funny, though, because I did feel like Bea Arthur's looks throughout the entire episode were the most dated. Whereas, like, I felt like Betty White, like, Rose and Blanche... I didn't feel like they were. I was like, these
you
felt
didn't
like
think
they could have.
Blanche was dated.
She was dated, but in sort of, it felt like she was dated in that it was
a dress that was the pattern of a 90s couch during the wake scene.
I guess.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Dorothy's looks throughout the entire series, they're the most drapiest.
Yeah.
It's this weird, like, I have no idea what her body looks like. When I think of Bea Arthur and Blanche, and Dorothy, I think of a rectangle.
Yeah.
Because it's just everything is
I think that's
you know
true.
What? She's dressing for herself and not the people around her, and as a society, we have trouble dealing with that.
Exactly. Yeah. I think so.
I would call it
that's
loose Annie Hall.
Yeah.
It's like...
Well, exactly my point.
Yeah.
I would also say that, you know, you see that now, that there's a trend in wealthy... progressive women's fashion towards shapeless bags that only very, very skinny, attractive women can look even halfway decent in. But it also is like, I'm not dressing for anyone.
That's
I'm just wearing this sack.
And it fits with Dorothy's character. It's also why I think she does look dated, just because like she stood out then and she stands out now.
I thought she looked regal and a little scary.
Yes. Yeah. This is also, her hair is longer in this season, and they frame it like, it feels like the bangs or like the front part is like cut in a layer that hits right at her cheekbones, and they just make her cheekbones look even more like it's just this.
If we're talking hair, I have to call out the piano player.
Oh yeah.
Whose hair does he remind you? Does his hair remind you of?
Was it like a, it just looks like a 90s dude hair. It's like that weird blurry.
It reminded me of the current president of the United States.
Oh, God.
I was like, but it's like the way it was like done, I was like, oh, he's still, not to bring him into this, but it was
thick
like.
Enough with thick hair.
But with thick hair, but I was like, oh, he is styling as if he is the Golden Girls pianist in 1992.
So we get to, there's this really great bit. There's a lot of good, like, classic singing bits in this.
Yeah.
There's the whole Dorothy starts talking about music to the piano player.
Right.
And he starts, like, asking, like, do you sing? And she's like, no, it's that whole, like, don't let me sing.
Right.
And she's finally like, oh, okay, cool. And she does, like, she does, what'll I do?
Yeah.
This scene was unclear to me. Did she not want to sing and was slowly made comfortable? Or did she very much want to sing and was forcing him to get her to do it? I didn't know how to read it.
Why? Because I read it as, I feel, well, because the way it plays out is she does, like, the first verse or two very, like, she's seated. It's very, like, it's almost as if she's reminiscing while singing. There's, like, this kind of far-off gaze in her eye, and she's like, what a light. Like, it's very nice,
it's very
and pretty.
Good.
And then, like, the song theoretically ends, and then it's this, like,
when I'm alone with only dreams of you that won't come true. What'll I do? What'll I do with just
just a photograph. That's where it's like, oh, I think that she was not into it and then was slowly getting into it. And then was, and I wrote down, like, it's she's singing a laugh line right there.
Yeah.
She's like, that's like a, I don't know, if you're judging comedy like the Olympics, that's like a, like, high difficulty.
No, definitely.
To make someone laugh through doing straight singing, because the song isn't funny, she's not singing it funny.
Yeah.
It's
no,
just
it's very good.
The character moment of her standing up when you think it's done.
Yeah, it was great. My question is, again, for someone who has watched, is this the first time we know that Dorothy can sing?
No, they worked that shit in.
Got it. Okay. I would have been shocked to have known that this was, like, because, yeah, I would imagine that with...
It's like a Broadway dame.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, work with what you have. It was, but they would do that in, like, Andy Griffith and like, Murder, She Wrote, where they'd randomly have these moments where it's like, remember, I'm an amazing performer.
Yeah.
And it's like, but it doesn't have any relevance on anything. We just wanted to, like, Andy Griffith clearly wanted to sing, like, Midnight Special in, like, a episode. But I was wondering that, because I was like, this would be really weird if this was the first time they took advantage of it. She was amazing. It was really great.
Yeah.
It was so moving. It was also, like you said, like, really interesting in a comedy for them to kind of allow her to be excellent and, like, just stand back for a minute and be like, we'll just let her do it. And yeah, I feel like most comedies would feel the need to undercut it. Or
there wouldn't be the patience for the moment.
Yeah. To, like, we got to put a joke in somewhere.
That
it's
is,
like,
yeah. Cause that's what I was watching is like, they don't make them like this anymore.
Yeah.
That's kind of like,
it made me cry. I was sitting there trying to dab it. Like, keep my, because also it was this character who we know has been unlucky in love, and even having not seen the show, like, you just know in the 1 minute into it enough about her, and so they chose the most heartbreaking and poignant of songs.
Yeah,
and she was performing the shit out of it as if there was a deeper underlying meaning towards it, and I just, it was very,
that was apparently, because the big book I read up on it before we got that was one of Bea Arthur's requests, because they're like, well, of course we're going to do this because she can sing. And I think Hard-Hearted Hannah, which is a song she does later, was like, well, you're going to do that, obviously. And then she was like, I also want to do something pretty because I want to show people that I can also do this, because most of the time, Bea Arthur's going to do these, like, browsing, like, you know. And so, like, they gave her this, and that's the first song she does in the episode. And it's like, oh, God.
It was so good. It also set it up. It was really great because it made you, man, but Rue McClanahan, she's so horrible in the episode, but you don't hate her. Like, that's the thing, because you feel for her, too, that she's like, I don't know. I felt that was a trick.
I felt sadder for her than Bea Arthur.
Yeah.
Because she needed all that attention.
So yeah.
She needed it, and also the way she gets it. Is there anything sadder than... No, truly, though. Is there anything sadder than a beautiful woman where that's kind of all she's got?
Yeah.
Who's now aged.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God. It's gotten but so deep. Yeah, because that's what she is.
And
that's
why I love her. And like,
but yeah, but that I think you also, that was again the kind of magic of it, is that you don't hate her because
you pity her
and you can feel empathetic.
And is there anything sadder than pitying a woman?
The B plot of this episode. We can like probably knock out all the B plot in one discussion.
Oh, I thought you meant the B plot of this episode, and I was oh, you mean the second cut that's going to be a sad version of this podcast?
Yeah, it's a double disc. One is
I'd like to talk about the B plot.
I love the B plot.
It's like they had to give, you know, you have to give Sophia, like, the cool thing about Golden Girls is that it pairs off in these interesting ways. It's like, cool. So, like, Blanche and Dorothy, A-plot, what can Sophia and Rose do?
Right.
They're a weird, they're, like, there's not a straight person in that, too.
Yeah.
Usually Dorothy and Blanche kind of are the ones, they all play, Dorothy's always a straight person, the other three kind of flit in and out of it.
Yeah.
But Sophia and Rose are rarely the straight person.
No.
So they give them a plot that is typically, like, yeah, it's as crazy as a Rose-Sophia plot should be, where they enter the episode, like, oh, we just got back from this great wake.
Yeah.
The most fun Sophia's ever had.
Yeah, which is great.
And so they're like, someone was dancing with the corpse. And
it was an Irish wake.
Yeah.
But that would, that's insane.
Well, that was also a great setup punchline, too, where first there's the joke.
I didn't have a problem with it till one of the relatives got drunk and started slow dancing with the corpse. But even then, it was surprisingly touching.
And then it comes up later when Dorothy's like, well, I'm afraid to.
Blanche, what if no one there wants to talk to me? What if nobody asked me to dance?
Now, Dorothy, think. If there's somebody out there who is willing to dance with a corpse, there's somebody willing to dance with you.
They brought that beat point in to serve as service.
Yeah, that was really
tightly written.
Yeah.
And so then the whole thing is, well, Sophia wants to throw her own wake because she wants to actually, like, hear the things that people want to say to her.
Right.
Kind of like a birthday party, but not in her birthday.
Well, also, I was watching it, and it's like, I thought that a living wake was a whole thing now.
Oh, yeah, they might have maybe the Golden Girls started.
I think it's become a thing. Which maybe it's a reflection of the me generation.
I was stunned that this plot happened in the seventh season of this show.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It felt like dealing with elderly women that this would have come up
way earlier.
Way earlier.
I wanted to point out, like, I noticed watching this, there are three distinct eras of Golden Girls.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. There's like the first three seasons with the original showrunner, name I can't remember. And that's like, it's a straightforward, great sitcom. It isn't too broad. It's like really, it's the density, joke density stays the exact same throughout. But the first three seasons or so are very like, great classic sitcom, never too serious, never too broad. It does have moments of real poignancy to it, but it's all about joke, joke, joke.
Yeah.
The middle part, like seasons 4 and 5, is where they get a new showrunner and it becomes like, super, very special episode.
Oh.
Rose has an AIDS scare in one of these episodes.
Oh, that's right.
What?
She would like blood transfusion. Like, they deal with, there's...
No, I also was like, why not Blanche?
Yeah. Well, the smart point was like, they were, cause this was hitting, like, I don't think, this was like Ronald Reagan had still not talked about AIDS.
And they
were,
right.
So they're like, well, we're gonna give it to Rose because everyone's gonna assume, like, well, Blanche, the promiscuous one, get it. We wanna show people like Rose can also get AIDS through, like, it is not a sex disease, it is not a curse, it's not, like, God's punishment.
Right.
And so it was, like, this really smart, great, the weird thing is, like, even though there's, like, two seasons worth of just very special episode after episode, it's still as funny, the jokes still come as fast and furious.
Yeah.
And it regularly walks this weird tightrope of, the characters are going through real deep shit, like, Blanche's daughter gets, I think, in vitro fertilization in those seasons,
whoa,
and she's, like, really, like, mad that she doesn't want a husband and all that, but still super funny. And then you get to, I think Mitchell Hurwitz might have come on during that time, but then like the last two seasons of the show are just bonkers. Like, it gets real crazy. And so an episode where Sophia's like, I want to have a wake, but I'm still alive. It's like, that's a kooky idea.
Yeah.
So, and even
Cheers
like,
sort of did that too. Like, towards the end,
it gets wackadoo.
Yeah.
But again, the quality and timing of the jokes, it never liked it. So it's really interesting. There are these three different eras of it. And so, yeah, that's why this plot, and so they start planning the wake, and then everyone comes, and it turns out that Rose forgot to mention that Sophia's actually alive.
Yeah.
Because she was too busy. You know, I was cooking the hors d'oeuvres and doing all this other stuff.
And making the punch.
Yeah.
And the decorations.
I also thought it was really funny to hear the use of freaking, or friggin'.
You forgot to tell these people I was alive, didn't you?
And I made the freaking punch, and I made the freaking decorations.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, right, this would be fuck in like in an actual, like, today, you know, if this wasn't on network, or it would be bleeped out, which would again, like, provide that shock value because it's coming from Rose.
So what did we think about the B plot, the wake?
It was funny.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. The A plot, the primary plot was more poignant to me, and it felt too real to me as someone who would wear a military style outfit to a bar and then
tag yourself, your
choose
Dorothy.
Not to speak to any men.
Exactly.
Whereas I just loved the nonsense of it, and I loved the darkness of it. There's nothing fucking funnier to me than forgetting the critical detail that she's still alive.
Yeah.
And when she comes in and she's like, hey, everyone, and everyone's like horrified, like a woman faints in the back.
Right, right, right.
And then Sophia.
Hey, everyone. For coming to my wake. What do you think of the dress?
Oh.
Well, excuse me for buying off the rack.
So what? Some people have to buy off the rack.
Yeah.
It's so great.
I was also stunned and thought, again, wow, this is the B plot? Like, this feels like it could be an A plot. Oh, like, yeah. You know?
And it also doesn't take up much time.
No, like, it's not so
even
short.
I think even Act 3 has none of it. It's mostly like a little bit Act 1, Act 2 is mostly that, and then it's back to the bar.
Yeah.
It doesn't really run concurrently. So it's like the kind of, because like Blanche dips into this B plot for that one wake scene. Dorothy is not there.
Yeah.
Maybe she's like perfecting. She's practicing somewhere. Like,
I guess they set up in Act 1, she didn't want anything to do with it.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And so.
That's right.
She doesn't want her mom, want to go to her mom's wake.
Yeah.
So then we get the grand finale
of
the next night at the Rusty Anchor, and Dorothy's there, and she's like, I'm not going to sing, but then she, surprise, already has the music there.
I thought she was going to be naked under the trench coat. Did anyone else?
Oh, I thought she was going to be naked, too.
Blanche comes in the trench coat with Sophia and Rose to like, here, look, like, this is what she does to me now.
Right.
Sophia has a really great joke where she's...
I don't believe it. My Dorothy is popular. After 60 years of bargaining with God, it's finally happened. Per our agreement, I'm off to Calcutta to work with the poor.
Yeah, work with the poor in Calcutta.
I also think it's so funny that she's been holding out for like 60 years of doing something nice, being like, no,
not until my Dorothy's popular.
Right.
And that's also the kind of joke that's very much a season 7 Golden Girls joke, because that's just like a good, like, has no basis in reality. Yeah. Sophia isn't really, like, saying that joke to anyone in particular.
No, she speaks it to God in a bar.
Yeah. And then gets up and walks away.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
To Calcutta? Like, where does she go?
Yeah,
like,
she's gone.
Yeah.
So then we get the, like, there's a really great line where Blanche has this breakdown. She gets up, and then Rose turns to Sophia and says,
boy, when the mask falls off, it really makes a thud.
That was very funny. That was one of my favorite. I think Rose had my favorite jokes of the whole. That joke and then the later joke was very funny.
I liked Blanche's jokes as well.
Yeah.
I thought they were solid.
I thought. Yeah, and then Blanche does
this, which let's talk, so like the background on this is like Blanche or Rue McClanahan apparently just worked with a partner, like she had written the book for a musical that was going up in LA at that time.
Yeah.
So she worked with the choreographer to like really choreograph this scene. Because she was like, this is my Emmy episode. So this is the episode she submitted to the Emmys that year for, to be considered for Best Supporting
that
Actress.
That makes sense.
Or I think she might have been Best Actress at this point. And so she like wanted to get it right, and the thing is a marvel of physical comedy
because
she
good.
Takes off her trench coat. She's wearing what looked like a Valentine dress, like it's like bright red
flapper.
Tights, like bunch of like danglies.
Yeah,
she like starts off on the piano. She's twisting around, getting tangled up in the cord.
First, she loses her shoe. Which I love because that was not. Because you know this isn't going to go well.
No, yeah.
And she's got a mic with a cord.
Yeah.
So you know certain things. And she's on a piano. So you know some of what's coming. But I loved that the first thing they choreographed for her was for her shoe to go flying across the bar. So the rest of it, you have the visual of her in only one shoe. Trying to be sexy.
But I was surprised because there was a part of me thinking, oh, she's going to be a bad singer. But I knew in my head, Rue McClanahan is... like another Broadway star.
Can sing,
and is amazing. So it's like, how are they going to undercut it? And it's like, her desperation is what makes it so bad.
Well, and she wasn't truly singing. She was more almost, I felt, speaking it.
Yeah. She's doing I Want to Be Loved by You.
Yeah.
Which they chose that one because like that's a high difficulty song of like, well, it's there's more room for error.
Yeah.
Singing at the wrong tempo, not
right.
And also the like boop boop bee doo is like it's supposed to be.
It's sort
super
of a gross song anyway.
Cutesy, and if you're doing that sloppily is even funnier.
Yeah.
So she like backs off of the piano, hits the keys, falls, like sits on someone's hip.
Strangles a man with the cord.
Strangles a man with the cord accidentally.
Oh, sits on the guy with the hip replacement. Yeah. That was great.
Yeah, when she just looks like she's got it back together and she's back on track, she learns that the person...
Hi, handsome. What's your name?
His name's Don and he just had hip surgery.
And then I love that it's also the pianist who's the whole one who was so supportive of Blanche brought up, who's like, He just had his hip replaced.
Get off. Like, yeah. And then she goes and talks to another guy, like, ooh, is that a gun in your pocket? Are you just happy to see me? And he slaps a gun down on the thing.
It is. Yeah. I do think they have a... And she's like, yeah, she's it's taking so a great. It's also very of the... I think the place, that is where... Like, oh, right, this is a retirement community. Yeah. So it's very funny that they have
it's
the hip replaced.
Or not,
well, but it's like, Florida. It's an old person bar, definitely.
Yeah, but they kind of play into that. It's like very using the world and the circumstance of she comes in and all these old guys love her. It's like, right, it just shows how pathetic and sort of desperate. And it is really interesting that the men sort of resonate and respond to someone who's kind of soulful.
Yeah.
Where she sings, What'll I Do? And then the other one's sort of like a fun standard. And then like Rue McClanahan's over-sexualized sort of trying to be younger and cutesy like kind of blows up in her face.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's basically...
It's a gay bar, right?
It's a gay bar. It's a gay bar. At this gay bar, this would normally go over like gangbusters.
The thing that never quite fit together for me was also they're both loving going there all the time. But what action is coming out of this? They're not. Nobody's asking for their number. They're not going on a date. They're just going back
just
again
attention.
Night after night.
Journey to the center of attention. That's all they are getting.
Except there is the sort of weird thing where she's like, that's not the worst thing I've done on that piano.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, there's that one time and it was sort of like, the joke is them cutting it off, but it's like,
well,
what?
By saying
what
there's
is
a lady present, but she's the one who did it.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's like,
weird.
What's the...
She sucked somebody off on the piano.
Yeah, she fucked...
Can you cut that up?
She shot a ping pong ball on.
So it goes horribly and she like runs back into the bathroom. Then we get the final scene with Blanche and Dorothy in the bathroom and having their heart to heart where they get honest about it. But before that, when Blanche puts the microphone down.
So great. My favorite part of the episode.
The best joke of the episode. Not at all what you were expecting.
Rose, like, is, like, kind of concerned for her friend. She's, like, looking around. She picks up the microphone, sets it down. And then Betty White.
Yeah.
She just looks at the microphone, then grabs it, and then says...
Taps on it.
Taps on it, make sure it's on. And it says...
Two Jews, an Arab, and a priest walk into a bar.
That was so funny. That surprised me.
Because, again, you're thinking she's going to sing.
Yeah.
She wants a piece of the action,
so
she's going to sing.
She just goes into, like, Borscht Belt comedy.
Oh, man. Which is also, like, it's fun to see them sort of, like, that's an example of sort of going against the character in a really, like, you know what I mean?
You're Rose
like,
doesn't care about crappy comedy.
Right, like, but it's like, oh, but she's sort of the pure one, right?
Yeah.
She's like the pure, very put together.
Yeah.
And so that's what's really funny. It's like, oh, they're willing to slightly, not break the character, but crack it a little bit to serve
Rose
the
joke.
Rose
has seen on television that when you have a microphone, this is what you say.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really funny. It made me, it was, I had a few truly genuine, like, laughs.
Yeah.
And that
was
the one that I was like, this is, to me, that was the funniest joke of the episode.
So then we get the final scene of Blanche and Dorothy in the bathroom, and they both have this, like, nice admission where, like, they've both been jealous of each other. They're both, like, they're, like, you know, they're coming from the same place.
Yeah.
You know, apologize for stealing each other's attention. Blanche is still a little bit more standoffish because she's got to maintain her.
It didn't feel like, it didn't feel, cheesy.
No.
Like, it's like, I was wrong. No, I was wrong. Like, it was not done in a, like, looks like we both were wrong.
Yeah.
Like, it was more of just, like, just being honest and the subtext becoming text and being like, this is how
I
feel.
Well, they also kept, essentially, I loved that they played their games throughout. There's what could possibly be worse to Blanche than being jealous, not just of another woman. Or, I'm sorry, specifically of Dorothy.
Yeah.
And seeing the way... What is clearly worse to her about this is not the fact that she was wrong or that, you know, it's not even the jealousy that's the worst part of it. It's the Dorothy element that's most distasteful.
Yeah.
Right.
And all of that made it very funny and I think kept it from being cloying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I really like Dorothy's, like, because Blanche's like, she's looking for
you. Dorothy, are you ever jealous of me?
Every day of my life.
Nice and...
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. And that could have been a joke. That could have been like, no, I never, like, it could have been like a nice, like, dig, but it's like, no, just honestly, like, I am every, and that's when they're like, cool. So we're both in the same boat. We're going to share the place. You know, I'll do these days, you do these nights.
Yeah. You're right. There was definitely a few, like, that was another unexpected. That was one of the things, I think, as somebody who's trying to get better at writing, like, right, like, knowing kind of when to hold them and when to fold them.
Yeah.
You know, like, that was such a nice moment, and it did make, all you needed was one nice line, one true line. Obviously, when you have two fantastic actors portraying it definitely helps, and they can elevate any material, but it was like, right, they pulled the punch of the dig, and that absence of it made it land so much harder.
Well, I think it's more than just the lines they're saying, it's the fundamental emotional truth that I am a, I think, relatively attractive woman who's not extremely attractive, and have once or twice been in a situation, there's one time in particular I can think of where a woman who I worked with, who, her name was Keely. I'm going to assume she won't hear this. Keely was a slightly better looking version of me, like distinctly like one notch above me on the attractiveness scale, dating a very, very rich guy who just gotten, you know, wore a 4-carat engagement ring to work, and who was very wrapped up in being, her identity was very much in being attractive and who she was dating. And my identity's always been essentially being the smart girl who is a good speller.
The Dorothy. This is your Blanche.
And someone came up to
us
and commented that Keely and I looked like identical twins, which for me was a huge compliment. Because I'm like, oh my God, I don't view myself as being like this at all. And Keely's like who I'd want to be. And Keely said the right thing and said thank you, but I saw her flinch. For Keely, this was not a compliment.
Yeah.
She was getting told I was so much not how she wanted to view herself. And so I loved the emotional truth of this, that for, I do think that if you are a very attractive woman and that's your primary thing, and that, I think about how that fundamentally shapes your identity, to then even be lumped into the same category or be viewed at the same level of desirability. Like, I think putting aside this singing and the fact that Dorothy's getting this attention, it must be rocking Blanche's world that fundamentally they're also at the same level. And then, right, like when you're that more average woman, of course every day you wonder what it would be like to be beautiful. Your whole life could be different.
I think you're very attractive, honey. I love you.
We plan this.
Allie. But that is interesting.
But it's weird when people are like, oh, Catherine, you know, you don't view yourself that way. You view yourself another way.
Yeah.
And I thought of that when we were watching the episode. I was like, oh, this
so
is like that Keely moment.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's this whole other subtext where for Blanche, she's getting, she's just being brought onto a level that she never wants to exist on.
And some of that, and this, again, from, I think that's a really good point. And I think, is it from the show, do they deal with sort of the fact that Blanche is somebody who, as a younger woman, was probably traded in on her looks the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
She's older. She's, like, frustrated with kind of...
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's the episode where she... I think she has the menopause episode.
Oh,
and that,
okay.
Like... Or no, or it's... There's like, a menopause episode where she... She thinks it's something... Like, she thinks that she might have, like, cancer or something. Like, she thinks something like that, and it's just menopause. She's like, that's worse. It's like, now I'm not, like, I'm not youthful. I'm not...
Yeah.
Like, and that's... And there's also the episode where Blanche is taking like night classes and a teacher is like, well, if you sleep with me, you'll get the A. And she's like, I haven't been doing good this whole time. Like, she's been trying, and she like I would sleep with anyone. It's, it comes, let's move on to our trivia facts.
Ooh, love it.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So yeah, some facts about this episode. 17.8 million people watched this episode of The Golden Girls.
Wow.
And it was... it was number 28 for the week of watched shows, which is, like, Golden Girls at its peak was a top five show. So, like, wow. season 7, it had dropped to 28.
Yeah.
It was tied with The Cosby Show, which I also believe was probably in its, like, final or, like, final year. The top five shows of the week this aired were number 5, Roseanne. Number 4, The Monday Night Olympics. 3, The Wednesday Night Olympics. 2, 60 Minutes. 1, The Friday Night Olympics.
Oh, wow. Was this
this was Winter Olympics 92.
Lillehammer?
France.
Was this Tanya?
I looked it up, because in 92 was Tanya when she went and she placed 8th or 4th.
Yeah.
4th, and then, because I just watched iTanya, which was amazing.
I haven't seen it yet, yeah.
And then the whole crux of iTanya is, like, 92 Olympics, she washes out, it's like, well, 4 years, fuck, I'm done.
Yeah.
And then they come, like, the big moment of the film is when they come, like, they change the rules, they're not going to be, they're switching them.
Oh.
The next one's in 94 and not 96.
Oh,
so the 94 Olympics is a Nancy Kerrigan.
You're right. Moment. So 94 is Lillehammer, right?
I guess, yeah.
And then 92 was...
It was in France.
Yeah.
It was some A, Auberge,
yeah.
Or something.
That's
so
crazy.
On IMDb, 154 users rated this episode an 8.5.
Huh.
Would you go higher or lower? Do you think an 8.5 is accurate? And
it's,
this is like on all TV.
Yeah,
all
that's
TV?
The thing. It's hard because I haven't seen.
Because if you have, I think
Golden
for
Girls.
So I'll say for a Golden Girls episode, I would say that 8.8. That's about right.
Yeah, I think.
As someone that's like obsessed with Golden Girls, I would say this is like
that's
a solid
all TV.
But of all TV,
I mean, all TV. I think it's like I'd feel bad saying the number that popped into my head.
What,
2?
4?
Really?
All TV. The entire catalog of
I mean, like, the moon landing is pretty
yeah.
big. Like,
what if you just said comedy?
Or when I said 8.5, what emotion did that elicit from you? It was like, oh, that's too high. Or was it, oh, that's all right. Maybe that's how I should ask.
I would say 8, 7.
Okay.
Like, around that.
Yeah.
I thought it was, if we're talking about comedy that's multi-cam
yes.
live studio audience, that
yeah.
feels about right.
Yeah. Because I think Golden Girls, and when I make my defense of the multi-cam sitcom, I always say, watch Golden Girls.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get the joke density that you are used to from a 30-hour.
Yeah.
Right, and
but
that's
then, like,
the thing that, by the end of it, I completely blocked out
which
that
is
there
the
was
point.
An audience.
I think we hear the audience in these shows because the show isn't doing the job of being good.
Right.
That's my main thing of, like, when a multi-cam
right.
show is firing and good,
there's
you
also,
don't get it.
To me, such a difference between live studio because it was... To me, they were reacting to all the same moments
mm-hmm.
I was reacting to.
It isn't, like, programmed.
In the right
it's
way.
Very...
Yeah. And so I think that made it easy to forget they were there because it was more like you were watching it with a group.
Ideally,
yeah.
you're laughing when the laugh track is going,
yeah.
so you're
yeah.
never going to notice that there is one.
And you're
right.
internally applauding.
Yeah.
You're applauding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. And it makes it so much more immediate. We went in the Frasier episode because we did that Innkeepers episode, which
yeah.
is just like a one act, basically.
Right. Unbelievable.
And it's, like, so amazing.
Yeah.
So the NBC Saturday night lineup at the time was Golden Girls, Walter and Emily, Empty Nest, and Nurses. So the funny thing is
Empty Nest I've heard of.
Golden Girls,
it.
Empty Nest, and Nurses are all in the same universe.
Yeah.
They are all spinoffs. Empty Nest is a spinoff of Golden Girls.
Oh, wow.
And then Nurses is a spinoff of Empty Nest. And they were all on the same night, and they would do event nights. Like, there's a night when a hurricane hit Miami, and so the entire night was like an hour-long Golden Girls hurricane episode, and then Hurricane Empty Nest, Hurricane
yeah.
Nurses. And when Golden Girls ends... They do the Golden Palace for one season, which is all of them except for B. Arthur.
Oh, right.
And then when that gets canceled because it wasn't good.
Yeah.
Sophia Estelgetti goes over to Empty Nest and is on Empty Nest for like another 2 years.
Wow.
So that's, it blows my mind. There are Sophia episodes I've never seen. I don't know. So Walter and Emily only lasted 13 episodes. It was a sitcom starring Brian Keith, who was the uncle from A Family Affair, which is a 60s sitcom
oh,
that I used
wow.
to watch.
Yeah.
And Cloris Leachman
oh.
from Mary Tyler Moore.
Yeah,
and then
great.
Just being Cloris Leachman.
She's great, yeah.
And it only lasted 13 episodes, and it was about grandparents taking care of their grandson, played by Matt Lawrence, Joey Lawrence's brother.
Oh, wow.
It only lasts 13 episodes.
That is so crazy. The other thing that's so bizarre, and again, this was also, and maybe I'm speaking out of turn here, but there was like Murder, She Wrote, Matlock, Golden Girls. Like, these were primetime television shows.
That were for old people. Like, the world that starred old people.
What's
Blue Bloods?
Yeah.
Like,
no, I mean, you're right.
CBS's
whole business model.
No, but it is crazy to me that all the stuff you talked about was just like, a major network was showing tons of shows that
Saturday
were about
Night,
like older people.
Saturday Night was
doing...
geared towards
Saturday
your
Night,
grandparents,
right.
Like their watch,
that's
like
right.
Programming for them.
Yeah.
The other thing that I find fascinating is that like Julia Louis-Dreyfus now is, I think, older than all of the actresses on the Golden Girls were when it started.
That's like, so depressing.
There is a way that yeah. we present oldness
yes.
now. Like in the, and it's a thing that I don't know how to get into. Women in the 80s, people in the 80s just generally looked older.
Yeah.
Because the fashions looked older.
Everybody
smoking.
Smoked.
Yeah.
So everyone, but like when
looked
you see
rough.
Like,
skincare.
Drugs.
Like the actresses nowadays that are in their 50s are like, Lisa Kudrow
and like Laura
Julie
Dern.
Dreyer,
also,
Laura
like,
Dern.
Life expectancy is different, right?
We're living longer.
Like,
yeah,
fingers crossed. You
yeah,
know?
And yeah, like you're not. Our definition, I think, of old age has changed because people
that's
retire
true.
Later. Like no, if
Golden Girls helped move the like it
yeah.
showed these women are in their 50s and 60s and they're still having sex, having career dreams.
Yeah.
Like it really helped push us.
Yeah.
Well, if you think about it, a stay-at-home mom who had her first child at 24 is effectively retired by like 46.
Yeah.
She's
yeah.
just in retirement.
Yeah.
And anyways, this was when they made that comment that Dorothy was 60 and we're watching a later season of the show.
Yeah.
There was this kind of, that to me was the least realistic part
yeah.
of the episode.
Yeah.
Like, no, she's like 80.
Right, yeah. That,
yeah.
It's her mother is still alive on the
yeah.
show.
Right.
That's, yeah.
But isn't Estelle Getty, isn't there that?
Estelle Getty is, I think, the youngest of all four of them. Or
yeah.
like one of the, she's wearing old age makeup.
Yeah.
Also, this was her first gig.
Yeah.
Was this show.
When did she actually start acting?
She did a little bit of acting in like the 50s and 60s, like commercial stuff. Like I think she was like a paper towel spokesperson. But then she like, went away, like, had kids, and then she started harassing Harvey Fierstein. I think she would go, I think the story was, like, she would go to his plays, and then basically, like, from the
wait,
audience,
outside.
From the audience, be way more funny than what was going on or something.
Oh, wow.
And he ended up, like, writing her into his stuff, because it's like, well, this woman coming in from, like, Long Island or whatever is, like, hilarious. And so then Golden Girls happened, she, like, went out and auditioned for it, because,
yeah.
like, Betty White, Rue McClanahan, and,
B. Arthur were huge.
B. Arthur were major, like, B. Arthur
yeah.
has been around since before television. Like,
right.
she had a sitcom in the 50s, and I'm hopefully, I have the DVD over there that I'm hopefully going to do
awesome.
On the show.
Cool.
So
Betty
like,
White.
And then
yeah.
Betty White, and then
right.
Rue McClanahan
yeah.
on B. Arthur were on Maude together in the 70s,
right.
like, big thing. So Estelle Getty was, like, the newcomer playing the oldest person.
Yeah.
Who would you say had the must-see performance of the episode?
I mean,
I think Ruma, I mean, now, I think I may be tainted now I know that it was her, like Emmy push, but that last number.
I say Rue McClanahan is what
yeah,
I say.
She was
for
great.
Comedy, I mean, it's a comedy. So
yeah,
it's
yeah,
comedy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because okay. I was going to say B. Arthur
yeah.
singing.
He really felt
it's a great all round.
Yeah.
You can go all round. She's great all round.
Betty White definitely made the most with what she, I mean, when you think about how many lines she had in the whole
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
She maybe had 15, 20 lines. And
13.
Just...
It's a
did she really?
Because then the book that I they say like they felt bad because there had been a streak of episodes where Rose hadn't had anything to do, and they're like she only had 13 lines in this episode.
Wow, she crushed it.
Also,
every line.
Who
she
was
got
her agent, and why didn't they negotiate more?
Like, <"Get> more.
She crushed every line though.
Yeah.
But yeah, Rue McClanahan was.
Yeah.
Bad. I would
yeah.
rewatch if we want to rewatch it right now. I would rewatch that.
So good. Must other people see this episode?
Yeah. I think it's great.
Say like, yeah, watch this.
I think you definitely watch it. I think it's a great. It's also insane that seven seasons in, we'd never really seen. I'd maybe seen one or two episodes. I knew kind of the premise, but
yeah.
like you can slip right in and like know exactly what's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I would watch it again right now. I liked
yeah.
it. I
yeah,
liked it.
Yeah.
A+.
It was really good.
So now I'm gonna do. I will update on. So Rue McClanahan submitted this to the Emmys. She did not get nominated.
Oh,
but don't feel bad. She already won one.
Okay,
all four of them won Emmys for this show
okay.
over the course
good.
Of the run. This is the final year. This is the only year it wasn't nominated for Best Comedy. It was it won, I think, its first couple years.
Like, yeah.
Nominated for 6 seasons, and this season for season 7, Estelle Getty and Betty White were nominated, but did not win. I just wanted to tie up that loose end.
No.
Before we get to my new segment that I'm trying, you guys are my second guinea pigs.
All
we're
right.
going to pull from the great TV sitcom book, which is a giant green book that I bought on eBay from 1982. That is basically an encyclopedia written by a guy, Rick Mitz, who has a point of view. This is not, it's not journalistic. It's not objective.
Yeah.
It's very
yeah.
subjective. Okay. So I'm going to flip through it. Tell me when to stop, and then okay. we're going to discuss one of the one season or like short-lived sitcoms that was okay. in this
oh,
book.
Because
there are some crazy premises in here.
Great.
So tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Okay, so we're going to skip My Favorite Martian and go here because I'm going to get to a summary that I can actually read. So I'm going to give you all these titles. Which ones do you want to hear about? The Bill Dana Show, The Farmer's Daughter, Glynnis... Or Grindel.
I mean Grindel.
Grindel.
What the fuck is Grindel?
Well, we definitely had to do Grindel.
Yeah.
So this is from 1963, 1964 is the TV season. Grindel. This goofy little show starred your show of shows as Imogene Coca as a domestic affiliated with the Foster Employment Agency who worked around and got herself in a lot of trouble. James Milholland played her harried boss, Anson Foster, and the rest of the cast changed every week, depending on whom Grindel was working for. Sometimes she played maid, other times laundress, babysitter, ticket taker, and more. NBC hired her for one season only.
Can
so,
I see it?
And there's a photo of Winston some shirtless looks... cameramen, like, working on the show.
So
I guess
it was the concept, the cast changed there. It's just her and the...
And then one, her boss.
Okay, so this is why I wanted to see it. Because when you read it out loud... I was like a domestic affiliated with the Foster Employment Agency, so I thought this meant that she was a domestic who'd gone to work for a child's foster care agency.
Oh, that's what I thought
and
too.
But if you guess the Foster isn't like, I'm Henry Foster.
This is my employment.
Like,
yeah.
It's horrible. And it's like the comedic premise is that these kids' lives are getting destroyed.
But it definitely feels like, to be honest, it feels like something that if you wanted to build it around, like for instance, if you had something like, Lauren Lapkus. Lapkus stars it like as a temp who goes like to
it's
a temp agency.
It's a great web series.
Yeah,
premise.
Absolutely. It's like
it's
I do a do different
premise.
Temp every like a different. You get to
that,
see new actors.
That'll hold
job.
My attention for 5-10 minutes.
It's a horrible premise for a television show.
In the
60s, entire supporting
20
cast
minutes.
That changes every.
You're hoping that Imogene Coca knows how to deliver the goods.
Well, they at least they got a great name that makes you want to watch.
Grindel with Grindl.
Well, okay, here's a question.
Grindel?
When was the word Grindel invented?
Grindel is in like
yeah.
Undercarriage.
But maybe because I also was like,
is she star as something Grindel? Is that her name?
Yeah.
Well, they don't. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That's her. I don't know if it's her first name or last name. It just says as Grindel was working for.
Also,
that's so funny.
It sounds very much, there's an element of I Love Lucy, right?
Yeah,
it sounds
wacky
kind
things
of
every
like
week.
It was a wacky, like
what
we're
kind
gonna
of
just
scrape
put this
is she gonna
woman,
get in?
And also how many jobs, how could it have gone on for more than a season? Because we're talking the 1960s, how many jobs could she have even had?
Yeah, as
well, like a teacher,
well,
said,
ticket taker,
laundress.
Yeah, babysitter, maid, and we're like, that feels for a certain class of woman,
yeah,
like all you can do.
She got, I mean, one season she probably got, I don't know, 26 different jobs. Like, what is she going to be, a doctor?
Yeah.
Also, I don't think the employment agencies farm out doctors.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, I've been a temp before.
Right.
I do a lot of filing.
Yeah. It's basically typist. Mostly
yes.
receptionist and filing. And
typist.
Yeah.
That's so,
great, though. That's really funny. Too.
We would not. We will never see more of Grindel, guys.
That is so.
We could go see it. Right?
That is so.
It might be at the TV, the Paley Center. I'm sort of stumping for that every week.
Oh, that's so funny. That is such a crazy. It is such a. I don't know how to feel about this book, that there are so many things that just were flickers. And she thought, you know.
This. I always say, like, this book ends when Cheers starts, and it's like, this show's good, but bad in the ratings, and that's it. So, like, this show, like, that's the crazy thing about this book, is, like, Cheers fundamentally changed how we view the sitcom.
Right.
And this book doesn't know it, which is so, like, I love that. Fantastic. Like, that's how old this book is. And this is also the updated edition, the expanded edition.
Can I see
Because it's newer.
Yeah. It has Beaver on it, the Fonz.
I want to find Car 54.
Oh, it's in there. Where can people find y'all on the internet if they want to talk to you about Car 54 or Golden Girls? Or
I am on Twitter at Winston Knoll, N-O-E-L. I do a podcast called Mission to Zix,
which the listeners will recognize last week's guest, Mujan Zalfagari.
Right.
Also, Jeremy Bent has been on this show.
Brett has been very nice
all at some point.
Yeah, in promoting the show, in having us on and also promoting us. So it's a fun show. We're thinking of it as sort of TV without pictures. So it's that there's a season, each episode's about 30 minutes. It's a improvised science fiction kind of narrative.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a reset every episode. Anyway, it's funny. Give it a shot. It sounds when I explain it, it's always people are like, huh.
That's great. It's like a Star Wars sitcom.
Yeah.
It is what you wanted the Orville to be.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people have been
saying.
Yeah, people have been nice about it and saying things like that. The other thing someone's like, it's Star Trek missions set in a Star Wars universe.
Yeah, that makes sense. Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Cool.
Catherine?
I'm just a person.
Yeah.
And I increasingly am declining my... just winding back my online presence.
Which is a smart thing to do. It's scary.
Thank you so
Instagram.
Much for having me. It was really fun.
Instagram.
Scary it's times. Locked.
Your Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah, keep that shit on private, man. Like, instead of tweeting at any of us about the show, talk to someone you love, guys.
Yeah.
Talk to someone
you love. Stream Golden Girls.
And stream Golden Girls.
I will send out an email.
Read Brett's articles on Decider. They're so great. We could have a whole other episode about Queer Eye. We will probably talk about this once we turn the mic off.
Yeah. Thanks so much! Woo!
And that does it for this week's episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guests, Winston Knoll and Catherine Mon, for dropping by and talking about Golden Girls with me this week. Next week on the show, I will be discussing the step-by-step episode Just for Kicks. Just for Kicks is in Season 1. It is Episode 8 of Step by Step, and you can stream that episode on Hulu. Until then, I want to hear from you. Tweet your questions about sitcoms to @MustHaveSeenTV or send them to MustHaveSeenTV@gmail.com. You can follow the podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at MustHaveSeenTV. And if you like what you heard, please rate and review the show in iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brett White. You can read the words that I write at Decider.com. The theme song is Patricia's Moving Picture by The Go Team. Thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to all y'all for listening, and I'll see you next week on Must Have Seen TV.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.